And our last headline takes us to the purse strings of the NAACP. Last week, NPR's Tony Cox spoke with NAACP interim president and CEO Dennis Hayes about his organization's recent money troubles. The NAACP announced it's cutting about a third of its staff and temporarily closing its regional offices. Hayes insisted the move won't affect the group's local offices. 3 straight years of financial trouble have forced the NAACP to dip into its savings, using more than $10 million from a rainy day fund. Though the group's all but certain to rebound, questions remain. How did this happen? Will a smaller, more concentrated NAACP better serve the community? And how do their money troubles compare to other nonprofits today? For more, we turn to News & Notes resident number cruncher, Julianne Malveaux, author, economist, and president of Bennett College. Julianne, welcome.
Thanks, Rye. How are you?
I'm going to have to start calling you Lady President now, President of Bennett College.
Your new sister friend, that works.
Sister friend, all right. Congratulations again. And let's move on to the NAACP. It's not bankrupt. In fact, there was a worse crisis less than 20 years ago, but they have dipped into their savings for $10 million. That sort of sounds like someone with a 401k well before retirement kind of liquidating it. How much is that money, that $10 million, relative to what the organization exists on generally?
The issue is the endowment, and the issue is the money they've set aside, and it's never good to dip into your reserves, especially 3 years in a row. So when you look at this, it's very, very challenging. For Rye, the real question is, they had never had a capital campaign before Bruce Gordon came in. When he came in, he stated a goal of raising $100 million in corporate contributions by 2009. Obviously, with Brother Gordon gone, that's not going to happen. And, of course, fingers are pointing all over the place. But you haven't seen the major contributions come into the NAACP that you would expect to see if they had made our civil rights a value proposition, not only for corporate America, but even for everyday Americans.
So when you say a value proposition, it basically boils down to what have you done for me? And not necessarily in a selfish way. A lot of people say, well, I may not be in a position where I need to fight for civil rights on a day-to-day basis, but I know it makes this a better country. And so that may be a value proposition. What do you think the NAACP is lacking right now in offering value, if anything?
Well, I think they're lacking, the NAACP seems to be lacking a compelling statement about what they're about. And I think that this most recent move to cut the regional offices further erodes the sense of mission. The regional offices, as well as the local branches, over 2,000 of them, are the individual's connection to the NAACP. In another life, Faria was vice president of the San Francisco branch of the NAA, and they had a labor and industry night where people who had been discriminated against or had job challenges could come and talk and find out if there was an attorney who might represent them, if it was something more simple that could be resolved with a phone call, or if it was just something that was office funk and not a big civil rights case. But people felt connected because of that. When you cut the connection, you cut the incentive for people really to contribute. And value proposition doesn't mean it's worth it in terms of money or what have you done for me lately. It's just, what do my dollars bring? Now, the other thing, you know, there are only 500,000 members of the NAACP. There are probably 35 million African-American people. So when you do the math, just 3% of us think it's important to spend $30 a year. That's what a membership costs. $30 a year on the NAACP. So first of all, I think their membership costs are very low. But secondly, when have they last done membership outreach, you know, trying to get people in? It's not.
Let's talk about age for a second, because it's, I know that the average age of the average member is up in AARP territory. And that's, you got to love the
leave
baby
AARP
boomer
territory alone.
No, I'm saying you got to love the baby boomer generation. But African Americans on average are in the average or median age is in the 30s. So there's a whole lot of people who are adults, taxpaying adults, who aren't being marketed to effectively by the NAACP. Isn't that correct?
I think that's absolutely correct. And I think when you look at the 64-member board, which is a whole other issue, I mean, let me say that again, the 64-member board, one might ask the question, how many people on that board are under 35 or under 40? And there aren't very many. You have civil rights icons like a Julian Bond and many others who definitely belong on that board and have paid their dues. But you've got to have a mix. And I think this is an issue that we're tackling throughout Black America, a mixed generational. You have to have younger people, many of whom could be key contributors. I mean, where has the NAACP been in all the swirl and conversation about African-American women's images and the IMIS and all of that? I would posit that we could gain from having younger voices and younger voices who also have influence and dollars.
When we really think about this centennial coming down the pike so shortly and the institution being so troubled, could there be, instead of a 100th anniversary celebration of the NAACP, a virtual funeral? Could that be the worst case scenario?
I really don't think so. I think I think this is a wake-up call when you see a staff cut, 40% staff cut, when you see some other things. The organization is being pushed and forced to move into the 21st century. Bruce Gordon was the chief development officer as well as a CEO. They need to get someone in there who can do some fundraising. They also need to begin to do things. And Bruce was doing so much of this with the website and so many other things. It's just unfortunate that he left, you know, with the timing that he did. But he apparently had no choice in terms of differences in styles. We can't do 21st century civil rights using 19th century civil rights methodology.
Well, we're going to keep going on this story. Obviously, it's critically important. But I also want to bring you in just briefly. We have about 3 minutes here to talk about the economics of summer. We on this show have spent a lot of time talking about the economics of winter, high heating oil prices, and all of the problems that people have just basically putting food on the table and paying for their prescriptions and then also paying for heating oil. What about summer? In some places, the summer is where you really get hit in the wallet. I'm thinking places like Phoenix, where it's all but impossible to live indoors unless you have air conditioning.
Absolutely. You know, people could really do a lot for themselves by being very energy conscious, both in winter and in summer. There's nothing you can do about inclement weather, Farai, but there's so many things you can do to save. And, you know, I'd say to people, first of all, when you get your electricity or gas bills, they always have these little flyers that tell you about savings, and we all tend to throw them away. But they're great ideas. It's minutia, but all of that minutia, when you can combine it, can save you between 30% and 50% on your energy costs. You know, do things that are energy intense at night or early in the morning, not in midday when it's peak time. There are all kinds of efficiencies in terms of closing your drapes to make it cooler in your house, watching your thermostat. I mean, you walk into some people's homes and you feel like you've gone to Antarctica. They're paying for that.
Yeah, not only that, but, you know, it can be really jarring to your body, like to walk in and out of heat and freezing and heat and freezing, you know. But what about energy assistance for people who really just don't have the money to pay their bills? How does someone go about finding out about programs like that?
Most local utilities provide that, and usually there's information inside your utility bill. People who have a little more can also help. Usually you can check off a dollar or two or even more if you want to contribute to an energy assistance fund. But people who are challenged should make sure that they're looking at their bill and figuring out what they can do. The other thing is to try to, if you haven't done it already, average your costs over a 12-month cycle, because you find you'll have peaks in the course of your energy use, and summer and certainly winter are two of the peaks, but there are other months where it's more moderate. So as opposed to paying, you know, a huge bill in the month of August, maybe you pay a slightly larger bill in some of the other months to compensate for that. People have to be, I mean, especially for people who are income challenged, this is a biggie. People die because they have, because of too much heat. This is why you go into the hood and you see kids pulling fire hydrants off. They're too darn hot. And people say, well, this is, you know, illegal. We'll open up the swimming pools. But the fact is that we've had elders die because they've been too hot. And there are things that we can do about it locally, usually from a policy perspective and also with energy companies.
In fact, we did talk quite a bit about that in the case of Chicago, where you just had so many people die. But we are going to follow up again on this story too later. Julianne, right now, we have to let you go.
Always a pleasure.
Julianne Malveaux is author, economist, and president of Bennett College. She joined me from the studios of WFDD in Greensboro, North Carolina. And just ahead, a profile of opera great Cicerettta Jones, and our month-long hip-hop series continues with female MCs.
than the ticker of your pacemaker. More tender than a roni, but harder than a jawbreaker. So don't ever second guess me. And if you're wondering who could the best be, think a second and recollect the worst whipping you ever had yet. And I'll bet that I did it. My fingerprints are still on you. How many times I gotta warn you about the light? It'll blind your sight, but the rhythm will still guide you through the night. Kick, 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 kick. Kick, 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 kick. Kick, 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 kick